Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A year and a half ago, news broke that some Columbus City School administrators have manipulated student data, including grades and attendance records. In a report to the public yesterday, State Auditor Dave Yost said that the corruption came from the top and that the students were the victims.
This is a situation where we have a generation of kids in Columbus schools who there are members of that generation who were left behind, who didn't get the resources or the attention or the opportunity that they were entitled to. And it's because the adults cheated.
Investigations into Columbus's school data problems began after the Dispatch reported in June 2012 that administrators have been altering student data. Joining us now in the studio is one of the lead reporters who broke the story, Jennifer Smith Richards. Welcome back to the show, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us in the studio is WOSU News Managing Editor Tom Borgerding, who has been covering the story. Welcome.
Thank you, Ann. Good to be here.
State Auditor Yost said that a generation of students were cheated. How long has this been going on, and how are they cheated, Jennifer?
As far as we know, this goes way back. I mean, we wrote about this in June of 2012.
Right.
But we know this goes back to 2002, at least. I mean, that is 10 years that this went on in much the same way. And what was happening on a really large scale throughout the district is that administrators were going in and finding sort of undesirable students. So students who hadn't done well on state tests, students who had been absent a lot, and they were going in and withdrawing those students and then immediately re-enrolling them so that their test scores wouldn't count on state report cards, so they wouldn't be held accountable for those troublesome students. So those students never left the building. They were still there. But now there was this artificial break in their enrollment, and it mattered. Those kids never counted against the schools, against the district.
Four principals have been suspended without pay, and Superintendent Dan Good has said that they will be fired. Who are they, and what are they accused of doing, Tom Borgerding?
Well, the four principals were accused of basically helping this data manipulation. And Superintendent Good has he's set a different tone in the district, obviously, since he's come on last July, and basically said he's not going to tolerate any kind of involvement like this, and told them yesterday that he's preparing for them to be fired.
And they're not the only ones that have so far been let go because of this.
They're not, but these four principals were the leaders of schools where massive amounts of data moved, and they were personally responsible for changing some kids' grades. If you look back at what the district believes they did, this was in the letters that suspended them, they sort of detailed what the district believed they had done. They had gone through and found kids with bad OGT scores the Ohio graduation test.
Yeah.
Right, gone through and removed them. Those graduation tests, I mean, they're everything. They determine graduation. I mean, you have to pass to graduate for the most part. These principals singled out those kids and sort of plucked them from their roles. The data that moved in their high schools, it's Lyndon McKinley, the principal there, mm-hmm. Mifflin, Marion Franklin, and Independence High Schools, the school leaders of all those places. It's just a staggering amount of data that was changed in those schools, and we've known that for some time now.
Yeah, more than half a million absences were erased, and more than 7,000 grades. You know, when
over the course
one school year.
Okay.
2010, 2011, during the period of this audit. And so you think 511,000 absences erased. I guess that would make the needle move then in terms of, you know, how your district, because attendance is one of these measurements that the AYP, the Yearly Progress Report,
how much
measures.
Did it change the progress report?
So we don't know exactly yet. What we know is that it doesn't take very much. If you look back at one of the cases that came out way early on, it was a school district that's near Cincinnati called Lockland. I believe it's a relatively small school district, but I believe they only withdrew and re-enrolled, sort of the same process here, 37 kids.
Out of?
I can't remember off the top. Maybe 600. It's a really small district.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is it didn't take a lot to make that needle move. And they have a completely different report card now than they did when they were cheating, frankly. So, but here we don't know. What we do know is that under the watchful eye of the auditor, the most recent report cards are not as good. The attendance rates are way, way down, especially in the schools where they had been, you know, pulling a lot of kids out. And we know that overall the district did worse. I mean, if you had applied the old calculation, to these scores, the district would have had a D, which it hadn't had for years. It's been a C district for a long time.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. With me in the studio, Jennifer Smith Richards. She's an education reporter at the Columbus Dispatch. She's one of the top the reporters who broke this story on the data scrubbing in Columbus City Schools about a year and a half ago. Also with me in the studio, Tom Borgerding, WOSU News Managing Editor. He's been covering the story as well. If you have a question or comment, you're welcome to join us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Tom?
You know, and during his news conference yesterday, Auditor Yost, he described the data in this 2010-2011 school year basically as garbage because of all the alterations that had occurred. And there were eight other school districts in Ohio that did some data scrubbing, according to Auditor Yost, but Columbus was by far and away, they were just over the top.
They said one of their defenses at the outset was that, well, this is what we thought we were supposed to do. We thought this is what the law is. Is it clear that this is not what the law says to do?
It's very clear. And one of the persons mentioned in the report, Steve Tankovich, who was the data director, evidently, just in reading the audit, he obviously was working with the data very closely, working with some building principals and instructing them how to change their data so their schools would compete better. It's kind of mind-boggling just reading the auditor's report as to what was going on.
If you think about it, 600 districts, more than 600 districts in the state, understood exactly what they were supposed to do. And somehow just these handful of districts didn't.
Let's talk about Steve Tankovich. He has been referred to as the data czar. Mm-hmm. And also former Superintendent Gene Harris, who has retired since this all broke. She's not named in the investigation, is she?
She does actually appear in the audit.
But she and Tankovich are not.
I mean, nobody's been charged with a crime here. Right. You do have to remember that, although there are criminal referrals coming for some people, and we don't know who yet.
Okay.
You know, she hasn't been, you know, charged with a crime, and she isn't really clearly held up as some sort of as someone who personally changed data here. She didn't do that.
But
the audit does hold her responsible for having understood that everyone below her was systematically manipulating data. It basically says there's plenty of evidence that she knew about this.
And it was worse in some schools than others.
Absolutely. It was frankly worse in some of the schools that are considered, you know, the lowest performing schools and the toughest schools in Columbus, and far worse in high schools.
In one instance, in the audit itself, in the narrative, during a 2007 meeting with a couple of administrators that are named. Superintendent Harris is in this meeting, and during the presentation, she was present for the presentation. When the two other people in the room began to explain a process that they were using to improve attendance data, it says here, Superintendent Harris covered her ears during that meeting. So while she's not directly implicated in the audit, Auditor Yost actually never interviewed Superintendent Harris. But he says there's reasonable inference that she knew what was going on. And you know, we'll have to see what comes up from now on.
One of the most spectacular things about this audit and what we focused on in today's story in the Dispatch was that it lays out this really detailed narrative of how many times Gene Harris or school board members or other administrators were approached by people who were really concerned that this was wrong, mm-hmm. who were going to her directly and saying, this is wrong, something is wrong. You know, children are being pulled before judges and told that they're truant and are going to be taken away from their families. But they've been in school, but the record says they're not in school. I mean, it was this very bizarre, you know, years worth of people trying to notify someone that something was wrong, and nobody would listen. And the audit very clearly says, you know, Gene Harris did not do what she should have done to stop this. She basically had the ability to investigate this more fully and did not.
We're going to hear from one of those people coming up later on in the program who did try to notify administrators, and he's since retired. He's going to join us later on. I wanted to ask you about Carolyn Smith, the Columbus City Schools internal auditor. In July 2012, right after your story came out, she tried to brief some members of the school board. She was forced to resign. Whatever happened to her?
That actually wasn't Carolyn Smith. Carolyn Smith is still there. It's true that she, starting in August 2011, when they first discovered that there were kids who were going before judges for truancy cases, that their records were scrambled, essentially, that it showed that they were withdrawn or hadn't been attending school. That's when Carolyn Smith really started to investigate. She's the current internal auditor.
Okay.
But if you look back a couple of years, there was another internal auditor who had tried to investigate this. And it's a really sort of long and sordid tale, but this internal auditor tried and tried. Eventually, Jean Harris brought in the Ohio Department of Education to investigate instead of having her work, you know, specifically on the case. The department came in, reviewed sort of Columbus's procedures and their policies, but not the actual data to see if it was correct. They gave sort of their seal of approval. This looks good. And then somehow, you know, Tina Abdella, the internal auditor at the time, was taken off the case.
Okay.
And it wasn't very long after that before she was forced to resign.
Yeah, this is, I mean, just the Byzantine interactions and the goings on in the district, to see just this, what Dave Yost calls this snapshot in time, this 2010-2011 school year, and then to see some of the background that it started, as Jennifer said, in 2002. Frankly, they did a very effective job in keeping it under wraps. Yost referred to it as a bunker culture. There was intimidation of staff, and it had to be a tough place to work, I would think.
You would think. I mean, Bill and I both have covered Columbus schools for a long time. Bill Bush, who my reporting partner, we often would get calls from employees who were scared and had stories of this type of culture, this culture where you were not supposed to speak up, you were not supposed to ask questions, and you certainly were never to question the superintendent. And we would hear that a lot. And those are sort of difficult things. You stick them, you know, you file them away in your mind, and there's no way to follow up on them. But this report sort of, you know, paints that picture with authority, that it really was a really difficult culture in which to work.
We're talking with Jennifer Smith Richards, one of the two reporters at the Columbus Dispatch that broke the story about the data scrubbing at Columbus City Schools back in June 2012, and also Tom Borgerding, WOSU News Managing Editor, who's been covering the story ever since. We'll be hearing from one of those employees who tried to alert administrators at higher levels that something was amiss with the data. He'll be coming up later in the program. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A year and a half ago, news broke that some Columbus City School administrators had manipulated student data, including grades and attendance records. During a press conference yesterday, Columbus City School Superintendent Dan Good said that the district already has taken steps to remove employees who are involved in the data scandal and will take action to prevent future abuses.
I offer no excuses on behalf of the district. I can, however, pledge that as long as I am here, to the best of my ability, I shall not allow anything of this nature to happen again.
Let's just, still with me, Jennifer Smith Richards of the Columbus Dispatch and Tom Borgerding from the WOSU Newsroom. Let's go right to Bob in Columbus, who I think has a great follow-up question. Bob, welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. My comment is that these kinds of problems were going on. I'm not trying to defend Jean Harris. She can defend herself. But I'm saying these problems were going on under Rosa Smith. Check the records, and even check the records going back to Dr. Larry Mixon.
Well,
lots of problems.
Okay, what was your question?
Okay, here's my question. Concerning there's a problem with children not going to school, right? Not being there, and this is where the data was being changed. Who's going to determine why is it that the children don't want to be there? I think the reason is because they know that they're not being properly educated.
I mean, there is that root problem. Thanks a lot, Bob, for that call. That root problem that we talked about at the top of the hour, that a lot of kids were just getting shoved aside.
Sure. I mean, I think there are...
When they deserved more... services and that sort of thing.
Right. I think that there are two issues at play. One is that kids really were absent a lot. I mean, kids really do miss a lot of school in Columbus City Schools, and that is one issue. The issue at hand with the audit and the investigation right now is that administrators, because of kind of going in and monkeying with the data on the computer, were withdrawing kids who were actually there. Because they had been absent a lot at some point, but they were still enrolled. And so they were taking this, sort of sleight of hand action to make it look like they were not there, and then going and deleting absences for these kids. But there is a real issue of absenteeism in the district, and I think the district has long recognized that that was a problem.
That's the root problem, but
sure.
Their
solution was to tamper with the data so that it didn't appear to be as big a problem as it really is, or was at the time anyway. Mm-hmm.
And to put an exclamation point on that, in the audit, it talks about one individual. He was high up in the administration. He had visited every school during the 2010-2011 school year, and he noticed in high schools that the halls were half empty. They had 10 or 15 students in attendance in a class, and even though the data suggested that attendance was 89 or 93%. So the classes were half empty, but the attendance roll showed that 93% of the students were in class. It was just...
impossible.
Just a lie, yeah.
Tom, that was actually one of my favorite parts of the whole report, and here's why. Keith Bell, who you're talking about,
right.
He was hired to be deputy superintendent in Columbus. Now, he came from Westerville. He was hired. He came in, and I talked to him about this last night. He started to tour the schools. He went to every single school in the district and started going into ninth grade English and math classes, because those are core classes. They should be really full.
Mm-hmm.
So he would look at the rosters. There were supposed to be 29 or 30 students in those classes, but there would be 10 or 11. And he would ask people, why are there so few kids in these classes? Why are these classes so empty? And he said people had various responses, but they all were sort of like, well, you don't understand urban education, Keith. You know, you don't understand. These kids have a hard time getting to school sometimes. Sometimes they don't show up until after Labor Day when the school year starts. I mean, just like a million excuses, mm-hmm. he said. But it highlighted that the numbers, because these schools that he's looking in have 93, 94% attendance rates, very high. So these kids are supposed to be there,
and
they're not.
As long as they have those kinds of inaccurate attendance rates, nobody's looking at and trying to figure out how to solve the root problem. Well,
right.
They're going to class. Mm-hmm. Things are good here. Let's go to the schools where they're not. That's where you focus on the problems. What is Dan Good? He said he shall not allow anything of this nature to happen again. What has the district done to prevent anything like this from happening again? Jennifer?
So they put in, I think it's more than 20 different measures, and they are all sort of technical, you know, measures about who can change things in the system, how the system allows you to alter data. I mean, they essentially have an entirely new student data system. And now very few people are allowed to make changes. Just one quick example is now to change a grade, if you're a principal, there's sort of a multi-step process where you have to file paperwork and explain why you want to change the grade, and somebody above you has to approve it. Before, it was just, you know, two clicks of a mouse and you had changed a grade. So there are all sorts of measures to sort of prevent
security what type measures.
They are. And there are a lot of them. And you do kind of want to give the district credit for that. That they've now put those in place.
And one of those things that he did, it created what he calls an attendance toolbox online. for students and parents. Basically, they can check, you know, attendance status and things like that. So you can read the district's attendance policies now. So he made that available online. So if you, you know, if you want to check mm-hmm. your student's school and, you know, what's going on there in terms of attendance, I mean, you can do
see
that
what's
right
really
online.
Going on.
And it's probably fair to point out that some of these were put in place under Jean Harris before she retired last year.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Steve.
Yes.
Hi.
Ann, thanks for taking my call this morning.
You bet.
I'd like to shift for a moment the discussion from the particulars of the scandal itself to that of the timing of last November's disastrous school levy. Many at the time wondered why anyone would ask the citizens of Columbus to raise their property taxes by an additional 24% when the school district was sitting on a surplus of funds and the findings of both the state and the federal investigations had not yet been made public. Passage of that would have raised another $70 or $80 million, it was said. It's my belief that the levy's proponents thought they could convince the voters of Columbus that passage of the levy was analogous to playing a simple game of checkers, when in point of fact, city business leadership and its principal elected officials were playing a very serious game of chess. The levy's proponents, which included the Columbus Partnership, spent $3 million on that campaign. That's perhaps the most money for any Columbus school levy.
Mm-hmm.
Except for a few cameo appearances by Urban Meyer, Mayor Coleman was the face of the entire campaign. You never saw or heard any school board member or superintendent good. The levy, as we all know, lost by 30 points. Here's my take on what I believe was the real reason behind the timing of the levy. It appears that when all the dust finally does settle, there will probably be federal fraud indictments brought by the U.S. Justice Department. Should there be convictions, the ill-gotten millions in federal dollars that flowed into the school district for years based on the fraudulent performance data supplied by the district will have to be returned. Those millions will have to come out of existing Columbus School District funds. Had the business community and the mayor been successful in getting that 24% property tax increase passed, the impending cash flow crisis looming for the school district on its horizon would have had a solution. In short, passage of last November's levy was yet another Trojan horse for a public bailout of a mismanaged enterprise.
Okay.
What? One more point. What's interesting, Ann, is that the same business interests and elected officials behind the failed school levy were in the forefront of the public's bailout of the Columbus Blue Jackets. The use of those public funds never had an opportunity to go before the voters.
Okay.
Taxpayers, Ann, are tired of being seen by the city's powerful and politically influential as being the first rather than last resort for bailing out financially failed sporting enterprises of millionaires and the malfeasance of administrators.
Steve, appreciate your comments,
alrighty.
But that's it for today. Thank you. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Steve does raise an interesting issue. State Auditor Dave Yost said he will refer those he believes are responsible to federal, state, and city prosecutors. We don't know who's on the list. He said he couldn't reveal that yesterday. But federal prosecutors, what interest might they have in this? And is it sort of what Steve was getting at there?
Yeah, Steve has thought about this a lot. I appreciate
Steve
that.
Steve has definitely thought about this.
Yes, he has.
So federal prosecutors have a relatively limited interest in a case like this. What they're looking for is fraud that would have been tied to money. I mean, they're looking for where did the money go, right? If it is found at some point that the district obtained federal funding fraudulently, you know, because of their data manipulation, then federal prosecutors will be interested. But we do have to say that in this case, there is no proof at this time that the district received federal or state funding because of the manipulation. There's nothing that shows that they...
In that year. The question is, now is the job ahead to audit all these other years going back?
I don't think there's an intention to do that right now. I mean, that would be... Think about it. This is one school year, and it took almost...
18 months.
Right. It took a year and a half to investigate. I don't see that happening here.
Yeah, and Auditor Yost pretty much put the kibosh on that yesterday during his news conference. He said he was pretty much done. It took 20 staffers. They billed the district $115,000, and he says he's basically exposed what the special audit shows. And you know, it's for the district to go forward now.
We have an email from Hal. He says, this is all about the politics of high-stakes testing. It is such a corrupting political game. Any criminologist will tell you that the higher the stakes for business administrators, including educators, the more they will try to game a destructive, regimented race to the top. In 40 years of college teaching, I knew better than to invite cheating by having closed-book tests, as though in everyday life we are supposed to make decisions without opening books. It's the system that's the problem, not the behavior of educators oppressed by it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That was an email from Hal. We're talking about the data manipulation at the Columbus City Schools. The state auditor made his report yesterday after an 18-month investigation. I'm talking with Jennifer Smith-Richards of the Dispatch and Tom Borgerding of WOSU News. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. And a follow-up from Angel, an email from Angel. She says, the model of linking school funding to attendance and test score benefits suburban schools, where kids do not face many challenges to obtaining an education. Local media is failing to put this issue into context. Once again, they're both getting at sort of this root problem of, well, a couple, that the problem of attendance in an urban district, low-wealth urban district, and then also the pressure coming down from the legislature to produce these numbers that are impossible for some districts to do, apparently.
Well, difficult anyway. Throughout this right. whole thing, I don't think that anybody has disputed that this is a high-stakes environment, right? Testing is high stakes now. There is a lot of pressure to do well. But I think that it's legitimate to ask the question whether that sort of pressure and the high-stakes nature of education right now absolves people, right, from wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. So in this case, is it okay that people cheated because, golly, it was hard, they needed to do well, there's a lot of pressure, so then it's okay to manipulate data? I don't know that that's an appropriate argument.
Well, the state auditor would say it was not, and I think a lot of people would say it is not an appropriate argument, that it doesn't justify any of the things that the auditor found in this data manipulation. The thing is, the Columbus City Schools, this is the other thing. Columbus City Schools, its total budget is about $1.3 billion. It's a bigger budget than City Hall.
It's the biggest school district in the state.
You know, in the student count, I mean, in the district, there's about 64,000 students, 62,000 to 64,000 students that live in the district, but only about 50,000, a little north of 50,000, go to city schools. So, I mean, there's been a bleeding of students during these last couple decades, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they're behind an eight ball, but it doesn't, as the auditor says, it does not excuse what he found in his audit, regardless of your difficulties.
John and Gahanna, you're on the air. Welcome, John.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, and actually the comments just made were go right to what I was going to talk about, because I want to make sure that people know that regardless of the situation, the fiddling with these numbers is not good at all. But I did want to know if they're aware of, and if you guys are aware of anybody or any other district, I guess, statewide, nationwide, what have you, that's undergoing the same types of investigations for the same types of violations. Because it seems to me this all kind of came about as a result of the No Child Left Behind program. I could be wrong on that. That just might be correlation causation thing, but just asking.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question about No Child Left Behind, and I'll address that first. But No Child Left Behind did two things. It did put a lot of pressure on schools, to keep up with accountability measures. But it also allowed us access to this data in the first place, this sort of very deep, very detailed data about attendance and test scores, right? So it did those things. There are other districts in the country, not in Ohio, that have been investigated in a large-scale way, in a very sort of spectacular way like this, for fraud. However, Columbus is a little bit different. I mean, if we look at Atlanta, which a lot of people have heard and read about, it was a case there where people were physically erasing kids' test scores and changing them to the correct answer.
That's right.
Then there was El Paso, where kids were being counseled out of school, right, because they were undesirable. They were not doing well in school. They literally made those children physically leave in El Paso. And then look at what Columbus did. Columbus was much more of a numbers game It was much more of computer trickery. I mean, it doesn't appear, no one has ever said that children were counseled out of schools or prevented from attending. It was something that was happening in the principal's office, you know, as she manipulated the data on the computer screen.
Yeah, or at the administrative level at the Kingswood Data Center.
Right.
And the thing is that district officials did this with the knowledge that, you know, what they were doing, but they had convinced themselves, evidently, according to Auditor Yost, that, you know, it was okay. And I guess that really is the, kind of the crux of where the district heads in the future is to, you know, if you change this culture, which Dr. Good says he is hell-bent on doing, you know, you have to change policies and procedures. And I think that's going to be the story going forward.
And change personnel. And Brittany in Columbus, you're a Columbus City Schools teacher.
Yes. Hi.
Hi. You want to talk about the administrators?
Yes. I know that this is a really bad thing that happened to us, but I have to say a lot of us teachers are, I wouldn't say excited, but we have had a culture of bad administration for a long time. And they don't always fire administrators. They just kind of shuffle them to another school, hoping it's a better fit. And, you know, even at first when this all came out, I felt more despondent about everything because, you know, teachers usually get blamed for everything. But honestly, if we don't have a strong leadership, you know, we can't move forward with better teaching initiatives and, you know, better support for our students. So,
and I think, Brittany, it's time to underline the fact that teachers were not implicated in this.
Right. I actually was one of the people they had to interview.
Okay.
For grade changes. And at first I was appalled, but my school ended up not being on the list because our grade changes were due to students that were on home instruction, and those grades end up not being reported until after the school year is over.
Okay.
But I just want to say that, you know, I'm really happy with our new superintendent. He's very, very positive, and he obviously wants us to do a good job and is trying to give us the support we need. I'm actually excited for some different blood to come into our district and you know, have a different perspective on where we need to go.
All right, Brittany. Well, you got the day off today, or did you guys have to report? You did. Okay.
No, we got the day off.
Okay. Well, stay warm, and thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we will hear from a former data analyst with Columbus City Schools. So stay with us. We'll continue our conversation about the Columbus City Schools data scrubbing scandal. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A year and a half ago, news broke that some Columbus City School administrators have manipulated student data, including grades and attendance records. In a report to the public yesterday, State Auditor Dave Yost said that the corruption came from the top and that the students were the victims. Still with us, WOSU's Tom Borgerding, also in the studio, Dispatch reporter Jennifer Smith-Richards. She was with Bill Bush, her colleague at the Dispatch, one of the two reporters that broke the story in 2012. Joining us now on the phone is Keith Finn, a retired data analyst, formerly with Columbus City Schools, who worked with Jennifer and Bill at the Dispatch on breaking the school data scrubbing story. Welcome to the show, Keith.
How are you doing?
Good. Without naming names, tell us, without naming names of anyone who wasn't named in the report, tell us what you personally did to notify administrators.
Well, I was a low-level person, But I work day to day with data, and had been involved with building a data warehouse and things like that since probably 2000, the year 2000. So when data discrepancies began creeping in, like reports, I would see higher level reports that were, you know, given to the board or to the superintendent, and it didn't match what I could see, I'd say, okay, is something wrong with our data warehouse? And it turned out, no, our builds are working fine. Something was going on after the data left Columbus, or left our district and went into the state system.
Mm-hmm.
So it just began, you know, trying to track down what was going on. And
just basically doing your job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Day to day doing the job,
mm-hmm.
and began getting kickback from, you know, my boss, not my immediate bosses, because, you know, we would look at these things together and we'd say, well, hey, this just isn't right. What's going on? But whenever we went up to the administrative ranks, there's a breakdown of employees within the district. I was a classified employee. I was paid hourly. The administrators are all on contracts. They're certificated, and it's strange how job classifications work in education world, but it's a totally different class of employees. So mm-hmm. whenever my class tried to speak to the administrators, we got this, you know, like, well, don't pay any attention to that, or you know, or you're obviously wrong and we're right. And that just went on for years and years.
Jennifer Smith Richards, when you first broke this story, tell us what you had and tell us what Keith Finn brought to the story.
So I knew Keith from his time in the district, of course. He used to do some of the reports. When I would ask for data from the district, Keith would be the one producing those reports and sending it to me. So I knew Keith's name. So when we started hearing that Jean Harris had had these meetings with her principals where she said, stop changing data, we were trying to figure out what that really meant, right? And so Keith had retired. I called Keith and I said, hey, you know, you know how this works. Tell me, what is it that's happening? And he basically said, oh, I've been waiting for you to call me and ask this. And Keith helped me understand what kind of work he had been doing to try to get to the bottom of it, because he had been sitting there, like he said, running these reports to try to see where the discrepancies were. And he had stockpiled on his computer system at the district all of these reports that he had been working on, mostly, I think, Keith, for the internal auditor, Carolyn Smith. Is that right?
No, that was a very late development. Most of all those reports I compiled were for my own use, and you start to develop a little level of paranoia when you keep getting these, you know, pay no attention, and, you know, your reports are off. So everything that I sent out, especially to Steve Tankovich, I kept a copy for myself. Especially, he liked to work in Excel, and, you know, you can change Excel. So whenever I sent something to him that he was going to pull into Excel, I kept a copy for myself. And when I the copy that I sent him, I also printed a PDF copy, so that if anybody said, well, what did you exactly send Steve? I actually had a snapshot in time of what I sent him. That will tell you the level of paranoia I was running into and trying to balance what my job was between what was being told to the upper administrative ranks.
Right. And Keith kept a very neat file of all of this information. And once all this started to surface, the questions about what data was changing, Keith actually told me where it was stored in the district's computer system. I requested that
file.
Enormous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was hundreds of spreadsheets and databases and Word documents. Like you said, it was just an enormous set of data that he had compiled. But that was really what allowed us that inside view from the beginning of how much data had been moving. It was Keith's work that he had done already there that we were able to then take and analyze.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, not Steve, I'm sorry. Keith. In Auditor Yost's report yesterday, he mentioned an incident where Mr. Tankovich was asked by some folks at, I guess, the data center at Kingswood to actually put a request in writing. And according to Auditor Yost, in terms of these data changes, Auditor Yost says that Tankovich refused to do that, and then eventually went to building principals to talk about what would help a school improve its rating. So were you aware of any kind of a request to Mr. Tankovich that he would put his request in writing to change data?
Oh, yeah. I had requests from him to do things or do various reports, and he would always come down. He never wanted anything in email. He always wanted to come down, and he wouldn't even give you a note. He'd explain in great detail what he wanted, and I finally said, hey, look, if you want this stuff, put it in an email so my bosses know what you're requesting of me and that I've got some of that personal coverage myself. I mean, there was a lot of in my mind, when I began having to deal with Steve, that I had to do a lot of cover my butt type work, which is, you know, it's time consuming and it's irritating, but he ran a very secret alpha. I mean, he could give the CIA some pointers on operational security. He was very good about not leaving trace.
Where is Steve Tankovich now? Jennifer Smith Richards, do we know where he is and what he's doing?
Well, we don't know a whole lot about him. We know he's at home. We sent a reporter.
He still lives around here, though.
He still lives here. He lives up in Delaware County in Genoa Township. We sent a reporter out to his house. Because he doesn't return calls, of course, and he never has returned emails to us since the beginning of this scandal. We sent a reporter to his house, and as she approached, they closed the garage door and went inside. And so he's still living here. To our knowledge, he has also not spoken with investigators.
We don't know why, though.
We don't know why. We don't know why. He has said nothing.
And is he retired?
He already, this gets a little bit confusing, but he had actually already retired and been rehired by the district. He had also taken a buyout from the district, but continued to work there.
Okay, the double dipper type.
It's frankly a triple dipper.
Yeah,
if you think about it.
Yeah, if you think about the buyout. And Jean Smith, former superintendent, she is retired. Jean Smith is, of course, the athletic director of OSU. Jean Harris. She's retired.
She retired, right.
Okay. Email from Bob. Shouldn't there be more discussion of Andrew Ginther's role as member of the board in this policy governance? He is now on city council, but was leader of the board when this mess began. There is a way the board was operating, a particular way they were operating that they say was part of why they weren't as plugged in as maybe they should be. Jennifer, what's the distinction of policy governance over how they've now switched to?
So policy governance is essentially a ban on micromanaging by a board. What they do is instead of making school level or individual district level decisions about academics or, you know, the way the district is running, they put all that power on the superintendent and say, we trust you to run the district as you see fit. As long as you are following board policy, we'll set the policy, you go ahead and enact it. And what they do is every so often review big chunks of issues, academics, you know, after school activities, finances. They essentially get reports from the superintendent. So they weren't looking at a very low level, you know, set of information. It was all very sky-high view. However, I think it should be pointed out that if this goes back to 2002, that predates policy governance.
Uh-huh.
Right. So this didn't start under policy governance, but the auditor said it thrived under policy governance.
Okay.
Policy governance was adopted in 2006, as I recall. And that was an upshot of some of the board meetings that, you know, beginning in the early 2000s, when the late Bill Moss was on the boards. I mean, some of the board meetings were very... You couldn't get a lot of things done.
Combative,
I think. And so, you know, the administrators wanted a way to actually manage the district, but they came up with this policy governance. It's kind of a buzzword around corporate boardrooms. I mean,
okay. It's
used a lot. One of the buzzwords is best practices. I mean, you've heard this a lot. You know, people talk about, well, what are the best practices to do this or do that? And so this policy governance basically codifies all that.
And now they've switched back?
Not yet.
Quite.
Okay.
Not yet.
Quite. So Gary Baker said yesterday that the board is reviewing
the president of the board.
That's right. The board is reviewing right now whether or not policy governance is the best model.
Okay. All right. Email from Amy. She says, I'm waiting for the shoe to drop. Who was pressuring these administrators to go along with it and this behavior? Someone had to be putting such pressure on them to increase the standings, either for state funding, city standings. Was there pressure from the mayor's office? The implications of this are extensive. School ratings affect real estate values as well. I attended and graduated from Columbus Public, and the problems are huge. Not addressing them head on just undermines those who are working very hard for change. What she kind of deals with a lot of issues there. We talked about the idea of how they covered up issues that could have been being dealt with.
Sure. I mean, there was pressure from everybody because nobody wants a bad school system. Everybody wants their school district to be great, whether you own real estate here or you have kids in the school district. So I'm sure the pressure was great to do well. Now, how that shifted from, you know, pressure to do well
and achieve it in a real, in an honest way.
Right. To absolutely, you know, smearing reality, you know, covering up reality, tampering with data on a large scale. I don't think we know. We don't know that somebody said, you know what? What we should do here is manipulate data on a large scale.
Keith Finn, I wanted to ask you before I forget, when you saw these discrepancies, did you connect the dots about why there were the discrepancies, or was that what you were trying to get to the bottom of and could never get a good explanation?
Well, there was a principal that really kind of lit off the light bulb in my head. He called me to get a report of students that had 10 consecutive unexcused absences. And I said, yeah, I can do that. That's not hard. And then he went on to say, yeah, Steve Tankovich told me that if I withdraw these students while they were during those 10 days, that it'll make, you know, my school will have a better rating. I'm like, no, you can't withdraw them because they're actually still part of the district. You're only supposed to withdraw a student when they leave your district. And he says, well, no, Steve says that if I do this, and that's when, you know, that's when all the pieces began falling together, like, oh, that's why we're doing this. And from that point on, I told Steve, I said, look, I'm not going to write any reports that support you in this anymore. And I think part of the thing that began to, you know, convince in my mind that this was all wrong, despite what everybody thought, was the fact that I didn't get called on the carpet for refusing to do, you know, to do work for him.
Hmm. Which
you would have thought that would have merited an insubordination at least, but uh-huh. I never paid any price for that one, at least directly. But I just told him I'm not going to cooperate with this kind of manipulation.
Jennifer Smith Richards, there were other employees of the school district that you did talk to that didn't want their names used. They were anonymous sources for you.
Mm-hmm. In the beginning.
In the same kind of roles.
Right. And all of them at some point had seen something they felt was strange or that they couldn't explain or that they didn't think it was right. It still is startling now looking back how many people discovered those discrepancies that Keith is describing and how many people saw this and said, we shouldn't be doing this. This doesn't smell right.
But if they'd have talked while they were still employed, they'd have lost their job. I was in the process of probably losing my job when I decided to retire. I actually would have preferred to work until 2015, but believe me, the handwriting was on the wall. I needed to get out or I would not have gotten in my 30 years.
And Yost mentioned that dynamic, especially, and talked about the culture, the intimidation, and yeah, I mean, this hearing Keith here this morning, I mean, just
interesting. You
know, it is
the next step.
Yeah.
Then we're waiting for whoever is referred to prosecutors for further consideration.
Right.
Well,
so, okay.
And I do want to add that the people that put that kind of pressure on me,
yeah,
they're still working for the district.
Okay.
And,
yeah. Okay. And the prosecutor knows that. I mean, the auditor knows that.
The auditor said that yesterday. I did ask him, are there people who you believe were key players who had some responsibility in this? Are they still at the district? And he said, yes,
okay.
They are. We know that they are. But to the prosecutor's side, what we know now is there are three levels of prosecutors involved, mm-hmm. and we don't know yet who's being referred or what those prosecutors are going to decide to do with those cases.
Any sense of a timeline?
We have been told that it's going to be weeks and not months, which is sort of refreshing.
Okay. All right. Jennifer Smith Richards, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
And Keith Finn, thanks to you as well for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Keith Finney's former data analyst for Columbus City Schools, Jennifer Smith-Richards, education reporter at the Columbus Dispatch, and, of course, Tom Borgerding, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you, Ann.
Tom Borgerding, WOSU News Managing Editor, has been following this story. Thanks to everybody for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.